This panel will be about DMCA as it, or the DMCA as it has applied and affected Usenet. And let me get set up here. I'm not that used to PowerPoint, so I hope you all forgive me. My crude renderings. Okay. My name is Daniel Baker. I've been on Usenet. I've been on Usenet for over a decade now, posting, reading. Been in the industry for over 10 years. Right now I'm the Chief Usenet Administrator for SuperNews.com and have been pretty much since their inception. Since that point also, I've been the person to man the abuse desk. And that just I don't like spam. That fell to me because nobody else was around who knew what they were doing anyway at that point. That also meant that as time progressed, I got to deal with all of the DMCA complaints once that came onto the scene. SuperNews, for those of you who do not know, is a commercial Usenet access provider. There are many of these now. There are also free sites, of course, and many ISPs provide services or Usenet access along with your standard services. Just because it has to be said, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not trying to give anybody legal advice here. I'm relaying what I have experienced, what I've seen, since 1998 as the DMCA came onto the scene. What I've seen from the trenches here. Various aspects of who sends DMCA takedowns, what they do wrong about them, how users perceive this, and of course what effects it's had on Usenet. None of these are my employer's opinions. These are all mine. They did not send me here for this. I am not trying to push their services through this either. There are plenty of other options out there that I'd be happy to tell you about as well. And finally, of course, I don't play a lawyer on Usenet. If you have any questions about what I'm saying, you think that I'm giving you legal advice, ask your lawyer. I have quite a bit that goes into what Usenet is, so if I could get a feeling from you all about how much you understand, how many of you are that familiar with Usenet as a user, do you read and post from Usenet? Good, good. And so you're familiar with the differences between binary, non-binary, news groups, all of that. How many of you know much about the back end, about how Usenet servers have peering arrangements and much about how things work from a technical point of view? Okay. All right, I'm going to try and breeze through this then just to make sure that everybody has the full background. There are many differing opinions about what Usenet is, and some people could even say that Usenet is many differing opinions. It is definitely viewed as by many as the last frontier still, that it's a bit of the Wild West flavor. There's due to the distributed nature of the network, the discussion groups tend to be a lot less regulated than a web forum or something that, say, AOL or CompuServe or what have you may make available on their own service. Even moderated groups, as few as they may be, tend to err on the side of allowing people to have their say, so long as it's at least on topic. Usenet shares features and functionality with many things that are more common nowadays, such as web forums, RSS feeds, blogs, P2P, but is much older. You see a lot of these features having been refined, well, one could say being refined from Usenet into what we see now, into the specific applications, which in many ways are better suited for things such as transferring binaries to large numbers of people. However, Usenet still has a leg up on some of these in its own way. Everything has its own, selling point, I guess you'd say. As everybody knows about Usenet being comprised of news groups, I'm gonna just skip over that. Let's see, I think that you're all familiar with the fact that Usenet has both discussion groups or flame groups and also file sharing news groups. This will be the binary content that I talk about. This is sort of awkward for Usenet because it wasn't really designed for this. So binary content, even though it makes up probably 98% to 99% of the volume, is done in a kludgy sort of fashion where one large file will be first encoded for transfer because you can't send pure binary content over Usenet without breaking something somewhere. But also, news servers do not accept articles of arbitrary size. So if you want to, say, you know, upload a movie of your daughter walking just as something nice and innocuous, then you'd probably break it into smaller chunks. And I'll get into how that complicates matters, you know, later on here. But it is important for other things that I'll touch on here. Articles are mainly posted by individual users. Some users are more prolific than others. It's largely thought that there are far more people reading Usenet and accessing Usenet through sites such as Google or the Talkabout Network and other websites, and also, of course, through their ISPs, than there are actually posting. You know, the people who actually have something to say or don't have something to say but have the free time to say it anyway, you know, will post far more than the people who are there looking for advice, looking for a particular file, or, you know, just searching archives for something relevant, say, for a company that they're doing research on. Some companies use limited Usenet servers, such as Microsoft or, I can't remember my examples now. Some of the software, other software manufacturers provide support where you contact their servers using your standard Usenet client in order to read and post questions, and hopefully also use it as a bit of a knowledge base. And that's one thing that Usenet does fairly well, so long as, you know, there's proper storage of articles. And of course, you know, Deja News and now Google Groups, you know, provided a nice resource for the net for a good long time and continue to, in my opinion. Some of you may not know that Usenet is now over 2 terabytes a day of articles. That's, you know, well, new and recycled, but not resent articles total up to 2 terabytes a day. And these are being sent out from sites all over the world. Growing interest in Europe has definitely impacted this, with Norway, Germany, and to some degree France contributing largely to the binary content of Usenet, often in their own language, but much of the time in English. Compared to 10 years ago, it was merely 350 megabytes a day. And when I got into the business, I seem to remember 4 megabytes a day being sort of a big day. Yeah. So Usenet has continued to grow despite, got out of sync here. Usenet has continued to grow despite all the competition, despite the new apps that are out there that do much the same thing, such as peer-to-peer file sharing. And things such as that, other sites to distribute pictures and so forth. Technical background, there are thousands of sites out there. They are all pretty much independent. Peering arrangements whereby, say, SuperNews decides to exchange articles with another site are largely informal. We will do this, you know, out of goodwill, that we think that they, you know, either their users generate enough articles that is worth our time to exchange articles with them, that what their users have is something that we'd rather get directly than through a roundabout, you know, flood fill method where it goes to other sites. And it may not make it to us in a timely fashion, or it may be bottlenecked somewhere along the way. If we get it directly, that's better. It adds to our redundancy. But it is informal. If we change something on our server that makes it where we aren't getting their articles or they aren't getting ours, it may not be noticed for some time because, you know, hopefully, you know, we definitely have redundancy. Hopefully most sites do as well. And it'll go without notice until somebody says, hey, this isn't coming through. But there is no legal binding contract between us and another site unless they are paying us for a feed. And with the size of Usenet now, you can't get a feed from just one person. So it would be foolhardy for someone to come to us and say, I want to buy a Usenet feed, a full feed from you. It's just too large. That does limit the number of players in this market because it does take a vast number of resources, both disk space each day and bandwidth, in order to receive a full news feed. An article posted by a user at one site is sent along with any others from that site to its peers, which then send to their peers and onward in a flood fill algorithm where it ideally will reach every site that would get that news group. There are other specifiers that can be given, such as size of article, such as so forth, that will limit what a site will send to another one or what a site will accept. So there are a number of factors there, but generally an article, even a large one, will transit all of Usenet in just a few minutes, save for certain bottlenecks where, say, it's going overseas and there's only one site that feeds, you know, that speaks enough English to, you know, in Korea, say, to peer with American sites or British sites or so forth. So they may not be so well connected. But for most sites, you know, the in America, a Usenet article will transfer very quickly. Let's see. Each site also stores each of these articles themselves. It's not like BitTorrent, where we're just saving torrents or so forth and pointing people to the content. These articles are on our servers. This will also be important later on when I start to talk about the DMCA, as this is truly distributed. This is also unlike P2P, where one article may be either on a hub server, which that model is sort of outmoded now. Nobody wants to hold it all in one location, or just on certain nodes, which, you know, it will not be on every node out there. For Usenet, in most cases, something that is posted to a popular news group will make it to every site, and, you know, that carries that news group. Some servers don't carry certain news groups, but among the premium Usenet access providers, other big sites for large ISPs, they try and carry most everything as best as they can, which is what I get to hear, that while users may request that certain things are carried or may want certain content or need it, say for a university, they may not need binary news groups. They may carry them anyway to the best of their ability. Space can be a dictating factor, and bandwidth is definitely a dictating factor there. You just can't get a full feed these days, which, again, limits the number of players, so that there are certain large players out there. Okay, well, Usenet is 25 years old. I, of course, you know, working in the industry and for so long, feel that it's definitely still relevant. It's still evolving and growing, despite all the alternatives and its own popularity bearing down on it, limiting the number of sites which can carry a full feed. Text Usenet, which, you know, myself and most of my coworkers who are, you know, old-time Usenet hands, feel is sort of the heart of Usenet. You know, binaries are highly attractive to users, but we still get plenty of people who are looking for a good clean text feed. That is where, you know, that is the heart of Usenet, and that carries on. And any, you know, most people, even with a cable modem these days, could take a text feed and not notice it. Their cable modem company may not approve of this, but it can be done. And there are many web gateways popping up now that provide access to either specific text groups or a wide number of text groups. So that is still out there, and that is definitely very relevant. Another advantage for Usenet is that no one owns it. There is no governing body. There's no Usenet council whereby you could write to them to say, this site is not taking care of its spam problem or its whatever problem, and they need to be kicked off the network. That is handled purely by these informal peering agreements. If a site is breaking the unwritten rules, or the written rules in some cases, allowing their users to spam without recourse, so forth, all sites can stop, or sites that wish to can just stop taking their traffic. They can block them out, so that they no longer see that. Their content will not show up on their site. But no one company can come along, or no one country can say, you know, we think this news group is bad. This news group needs to go away. It contains, you know, seditious content, or it contains stuff that we find, you know, to be too pornographic for, you know, our country, or, you know, what have you. It violates our intellectual property laws on a regular basis. You know, there's nobody who can come along and say that. As such, each Usenet site sets its own rules, and of course, the country that they're in does help dictate this. You know, Supernews is based in America, and therefore, we have to abide by the DMCA and, you know, step quickly in doing so if we get a takedown notice. Likewise, we aren't quite so held by claims of slander and libelous statements as, say, an ISP that was in Britain would be, where they would have to be very lively about taking that down off of there and issuing proper apologies. So every site is different. You know, sites in China may have a slightly smaller news feed than everybody else does. Let's see. Usenet still can be relatively anonymous. There are certainly subpoenas that go through to get information, but there are enough layers between the poster, in many cases, and the, you know, where they're coming from and so forth, that you could post to Usenet and never be found. There are abusers out there who we would love to, you know, string up, hip crime, for instance, people who, you know, flood Usenet, you know, and make tools for this. You know, it's been 5 or more years, and we still don't know where he is. We think he's in India. You know, that helps a lot. You know? So you could still be anonymous if you really try. There are anonymizers out there that help with this, you know, remailing gateways. Those are a little bit outmoded these days because they can't really place their content either, you know, often for philosophical reasons. They don't want to cut, you know, find themselves in the position of a censor or providing censorship, so they let the garbage through too. And many of their path header actually will say sewage output or sewer output, I think it is, in many cases for sites that don't want to take it. And easily aliased out, you don't see the anonymous remailers in such uses, say, you know, 5 to 10 years ago. Let's see, yeah, and then again, about text Usenet being available for free. You know, there are plenty of good sites for that. Google Groups is a convenient site for it, easily searched, but they haven't necessarily been such a good neighbor to other sites lately. They're a bit of a source of abuse. So I'm not plugging them by any means. They're just a convenient example. Okay, what is a DMCA? A lot of background here that I didn't prepare, so I'll go over this as quickly as possible again. The DMCA has been around since October 1998, designed to implement treaties signed with the World Intellectual Property Organization and Geneva Conference. It has quite a bit to it, really, and much of it doesn't have much direct impact on Usenet. You know, there's plenty of reasons to be dissatisfied with what came out of this, you know, what we have to deal with the DMCA, and there are other BFF panels which deal with that better. In fact, I think there's one on Sunday or Monday which will deal with the new DMCA limiting legislation, which could be useful. Only Section 512 has direct impact on Usenet, so that's what we'll deal with. In general, the Act limits Internet service providers from copyright infringement liability, or rather provides safe harbor if we meet certain criteria, if we take down something, you know, fast enough, if we alert the user, so on and so forth. There is a bit of a expectation to do this quickly, though, and we aren't given much leeway in making any sort of judgment call. If we get something that looks wrong on its face but is properly formatted, we're sort of stuck with it. We have to follow through. We can't say, I don't think this is what you meant to say. Somebody said that was a Mickey Mouse opinion. They weren't infringing on Disney's copyright. Yeah. And there have been cases similar to that, not quite so extreme. Like I was saying, there are various formalities and requirements for notification of claimed infringement, what I'll refer to from here on out as a takedown notice, to be considered valid. Unfortunately, my company, SuperNews, was involved in a case which broadened this somewhat, you know, not through any of our doing. That's just how it came out, and I'll deal with that later. But now the restrictions are a little bit looser. We're supposed to, as an ISP, we're supposed to notify the poster, you know, in our case it would be a poster or a user who posted material, that what they posted has been alleged as copyright infringing material, let them know so that they can issue a counter notice or a putback notice. And of course, if we get multiple notices over time that this person's a repeat infringer, or at least an alleged repeat infringer, because no proof ever has to be provided here, then we're supposed to cut them off, as would any other ISP, to the best of our abilities anyway. this isn't too small type for probably many of you to read. This just goes over what's required. I'm not going to go into it. Basically, we need to know who is sending the notice, you know, that they really do own the copyright, the material they're claiming is copyrighted, that they, or that they are an agent for that person. They have to identify the material so we know what to take down, instead of somebody says, hey, on your Usenet server, we saw this that we own, you know, go to it. There are over 30,000 news groups and, you know, 2 terabytes a day, over 2 million articles a day, you know, being broken. That's based on it being broken down, or large binary files being broken down, as I discussed earlier. We can't just go and search something out. Usenet is not by default indexed in any way. And Google isn't likely to be indexing any of the stuff that these people are complaining about. So we need specific identifiers. With that much information, then we're generally good to go. And that's what this says, you know, what is required for this before we can consider it valid, before we can write back, you know, and say, this is an incomplete notice, you know, do it again. You know, we need more of this, or, you know, this is incomplete. We're not going to tell you why it's incomplete. Fix it, you know, because, you know, that's what the lawyers say to do. A counter notice, which many people don't seem to be aware that they can send a counter notice. They don't seem to be aware of what's required to send a counter notice. It's a little bit simpler, but it does set yourself up so that you're identifying yourself to those people who sent that notice, and you have to send a counter notice. You can't say, they're wrong, it's obvious they're wrong. I said, you know, it's a Mickey, you know, he has a Mickey Mouse opinion, not, you know, anything about Disney. It has nothing to do with that. If you want to send a counter notice and you can't do it anonymously, you can't just say, I am the person who posted this. You have to give this information, which includes your address, your full name, a sworn statement claiming that, you know, yes, I'm really telling the truth here, I'm not just making this up. From that, the original party has 10 to 14 days, I think it's 10, to basically bring suit against you, to bring legal action, now that they know all your particulars. And with that information, you know, they can now bring suit. If they don't, it drops. The ISP is should consider the original notice to be null and void, that it had no merit. But that's the only proof that's really required as far as an ISP is concerned. We can't ask for more proof. We can't say, you know, no, we really want to see that you really did this, you know, or that did you really pull down the files and assemble them and see that it's your, you know, software, your movie, your picture, what have you. You know, we can't even do that much. And we really aren't in any position to pull them down ourselves to see that, you know, somebody who says that this is, you know, Leave It to Beaver isn't posting something under a different name or what have you. There are good things about the DMCA from an ISP's point of view, as far as it deals with us. Section 512 provides some structure for dealing with allegations of copyright infringement, which we didn't have before. Pretty much before this, if we got a notice of copyrighted material being on our server, it would have to go to the lawyers, and they would sort it out, go back and forth. And they may, even if we removed it, we could get sued. We could be considered to be contributory infringers, or otherwise helping the person to infringe, even though we didn't post the material, we didn't publish it, we didn't know about it until we were told about it. You know, we don't watch what's going out from our servers. We really can't, you know, with thousands and thousands and thousands of articles going out each day. Yeah, we filter it for spam. We can do that automatically. That's easy. So, you know, from the ISP's point of view, this does provide structure. We can get a notice. It has to have certain things in it. If we get it, it's all good there. It's all there. It's easy to process. Hopefully, they've included everything as needed. And we also, by doing this, by complying, we have safe harbor. We don't have to worry about getting sued, so long as we take it down quickly. And we, you know, there's nothing that says that we like encourage them to post this, or that we were aware that, you know, they let us know that, hey, you know, next week we're posting all of Firefly, you know, isn't that going to be cool? I'm like, yeah, we're going to get that too. And no, you know, so long as, you know, they're posting it, we have no idea. We don't want to know what our users post, and we really couldn't keep up with it if we could. Neither could any other site. Usenet is just too large. But the DMCA does do that. I don't know if Usenet would be
around and thriving in the way that it is without the DMCA. There would have had to have been other case law, in my opinion, to nail down certain things so that we weren't just scared out of our boots here. As a small segue here, a while back, the New York Attorney General raided BuffNet, I think it was, in Buffalo, New York, unsurprisingly, because of certain news groups on their servers that were alleged to contain child pornography. All of their hardware was confiscated and taken away. There really aren't any good laws there saying, you know, that lay it out in the same way. In fact, pretty much all the laws in that regard say, if it's there, you know, that's it. You know, you're liable. That's a scary place, and that could have been pretty much the same place, except for without the Attorney General busting in. But, you know, the MPAA, the RIAA, busting in and saying, you know, we're going to take all your servers. They're evidence. You know, at least we have this. In other areas where we don't have this, you know, in our case, we removed all the groups that were overtly, you know, where you could go through there and you might think from the name would carry child pornography. Other sites didn't. We left them off. We took the high road or low road, depending on your point of view, from a censorship point of view, that this is a good for us. It's also, in some ways, good for users that we're still in business, you know. The bad, if the takedown notice has all the required elements, we have little choice but to follow it. We don't want to lose our safe harbor. If something comes through, and things have, where, say, a company that has outsourced media detection, you know, and copyright infringement detection for, say, the Entertainment Software Association or the MPAA in particular, say their software, which is automated because nobody's going to sit here and browse through all these groups, misidentifies something, and this does happen, then there's really nothing we can do about it but remove it from our server and notify the user to, you know, as best we can. You know, not all of our users are direct, so this isn't always, you know, possible. Many of them are through ISPs, which outsource to us. We have no email address to this person, and if they post as, you know, goodposter@nowhere.org, you know, what are we going to do? Send email there, bounces. We tried, you know, there's not much to it. So we've removed materials that were misidentified. The user didn't really have much recourse here, even if they wanted to try and stand up to it. And in some cases, you know, it may have been misidentifying something that may have been dubious anyway. It's hard to say. We aren't in any position to judge it, and we aren't really allowed to judge it. And that's kind of bad because, you know, it'd be nice if we could at least mail back and say, hey, your thing is broken again. You know, you're sending us bogus complaints. Could you get it fixed? You know, instead, that doesn't make a notice invalid. We have to follow through, because if they turn around and say, you didn't do this, then, you know, then it gets into the lawyers and starts costing, you know, even if we don't go to court. Yes?
So basically, you're saying if you're going to be responsible for stuff that turns up on your site, you want to be able to judge what's there for yourself.
It would be nice more so to be able to look at the takedown notices that we receive and see if on their face they're wrong, you know, where we get something where it says, let me see if I can figure out how to skip out of this, and show you what a takedown notice looks like. This is one that was sent to a Cox Cable subscriber. This is off of chillingeffects.org, a very good site to find out information about all of this. Lots of good information there. It's all going to be very tiny text there, but let's see, the basic things that you're going to see, and this is one of those automated reports, and stripped out who sent it and everything. This says here off the screen, Die Hard, where they identify what the material is. You know, they say they think this is a movie, Die Hard, being posted. Down below, it gives information that they think identifies the user. Oh, look at there. That such as the IP address, and all of this is, they've culled from Usenet headers. Most sites don't put enough information in the Usenet headers to make any sense for this.
It sounds to me like the government can arbitrarily send out takedown notices anytime they find something that they don't approve of. It's just say, well, this showed up in our automated system, a keyword.
You know, what's worse is it's not even the government. That's one of the things we often hear from our users. A lot of people seem to think the DMCA is the DMCA as would be confused with like the MPAA and all of that, whereby it's viewed as an organization, that this is some, you know, government strong arm thing. Instead, this is sort of something that's been given over to the media industry, which, you know, you often hear the comparison between, you know, how much money their industry is worth a year and $66 billion or whatever versus the trillions at the internet. They're the ones who are sending out the takedowns. Like this one, I'm pretty sure is at the MPAA. It says so at the top here. They give all the information here. They identify the articles, providing some of the headers. They notably don't include the message ID that or Chilling Effects stripped it, but it's not uncommon for them to leave out. The one thing that I, as an abuse admin, really want to see is the message ID. It's the only thing that really tells me what article they're talking about. You know, a URL will tell you what exactly how to get to something on the server, or you know, a webmaster can figure out, you know, well, where is that going to lead to? They can at least pull it up and see it. But if somebody just sends me something that gives me the subject of the message and not even the news group it was posted to or the date it was posted on, but instead the date they found it on, and this is common, yeah, right, I'm going to look through all the messages near or around that, you know, before that date for 1 to 2 weeks, because they don't always find it immediately. A lot of these automated messages come through and the things are 2 weeks old, even older. Some cases have expired from our servers because we just don't keep things for that long, you know. But, you know, in other cases, it's sent and it wasn't even posted by our users, so we have no way of looking it up. If it looks like it was posted by our users, we could try and look it up in our own logs, which are limited and which would have the subject. But in many cases, it's not for our users. It wasn't posted by our users. We can't find it. It's not a needle in a haystack. It's a needle in several huge piles of needles. It's impossible. We can't do anything about it. But they'll send it anyway. But a lot of times, information will come through, and you'll see in the subject line, and this one is, you know, pretty obvious, Die Hard CD 2, Part 11. That's probably really was Die Hard, but they probably just triggered off of Die Hard being in the subject and it being the movies news group, all Bioneer's movies DivX here. But in other cases, this could have been posted to another news group, and that could have been a piece of software that happened to mention Die Hard, or it could have been something in German, you know, Die Hard something, you know, and it triggers it. So that's sort of what we're looking at here. When I see something where it comes through, to go back to your question there, and it's really obvious, like, they're talking about a movie here, and this wasn't posted to a movie group, nothing about this, you know, on a human inspection makes it look like this. And I don't even have to try and go and find the article. Nothing makes it look like this would be what they're claiming it is. It would be nice for me to be able to send back and say, could you be a bit more specific, or could you double check? You know, I don't even have to be able to just toss it out or ignore it. If they sent through something that, you know, totally lacked this information here, you know, had just said, one of your users has posted Die Hard. We are this people. We really do own this. You know, we really can send you this, et cetera, et cetera. But never tell me anything about it at all. I can at least push a button. It sends back a message that says, you know, your takedown notice, you know, was incomplete. Send us another. And we typically just don't hear back from them. Yeah, they just, as far as I'm concerned, mailing back to these companies is a black hole. That's my personal opinion. It'd be nice, you know, we try and do things, because the faster we deal with these, the faster we can do other things, which benefit all of our users instead of removing one thing. So, you know, if we can get them to send us something, which, you know, this is their way of dealing with it, we like that it's better than them faxing our lawyers saying, you know, the same thing and saying, we're going to sue you. It really varies. I mean, it could go a week with nothing, and then suddenly Media Century goes wild, and, you know, their system works again, I don't know. And we'll get flooded with them, and it will be, you know, the whole inbox will be just, you know, pages and pages of new takedown notices. So it really does vary. As an average, it probably works out to about one a day. It's hardly a flood at this point. It sort of there are set people who send takedown notices. People, I presume, feel that it serves their purposes to get their material down. In some cases, it's more just to, I guess they may view it more as a nuisance thing. They don't understand Usenet, which works, both to our benefit and detriment. Or they just don't care. It's not as high profile as peer-to-peer networks or whatever. Yes? Yes.
Can you not have an automatic response to it if it does not contain certain items, like, for example, the particular group?
We could, but the formatting of it isn't always good. Sometimes I send through things which have, like, XML attachments and all that. And while I do have a lot of stuff on there that, where I could push a button in Mutt and send back a notice and archive that I sent back a notice saying that it was incomplete, and send our lawyers a copy of this saying, this is incomplete. Or if I take down something, I push a button and it goes and uses whatever's information is there, if it was good enough, and archives all that. I can't really put enough intelligence in there that for such a legally sensitive thing that while I might be able to spam sort my incoming mail adequately for my use personally, I can't do that on the DMCA mailbox for the purposes that if we miss something, that could be more than just embarrassing. It's not just inconvenient that, we didn't see this. If for some reason the heuristics came up wrong on this, the spam mentioned Viagra or whatever, and so it goes in the bit bucket. Likewise, trying to automate this to look for the headers, they may not put in newsgroup name. In fact, in this one, they don't mention the newsgroup name. They have a file name. They don't mention subject. And it's not the file name. That is the subject of it there, the diehard CD2 part 11, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The file name is in that subject, but that is not technically the file name. It's not like on a web server, which is what Media Sentry and so forth are set up mainly to detect these on things where you have a discrete file. This confuses them. There is no URL that they really groke for this. So. Let me see. Let me back to the presentation if I can find it. Find out where I am. Oh no, I killed it. Let me catch up. So, from my point of view, if we had more ability to, say this is invalid on its face, rather than we've got to try and send this to some poor user who's saying, okay, yeah, some megacorp says that I did something wrong and you want me to go out on a limb and give them the only recourse that they'll have here is to back down or ignore it, or to sue me, take me to court over it. I don't know that I like those odds, I'll change news servers. I'll just, quit y'all. And, some people have. They think that, we're strong-arming them when we're doing what the law requires, and it's not even, when we send them the notice and it has to include language which says, if you do this again, you're out of here, because there's a repeat infringers clause in Section 512, then they think that we're being the bad guys here. And so, that has a bad aspect to it, too. Some understand, some just find it more practical to move on. They figure they've been outed here, that's easier for them to take their dollar elsewhere or, even switch ISPs to one that uses somebody else who outsources to another provider or provides Usenet themselves rather than go through the rigmarole or get sued. Yes?
Yep. Just out of curiosity, how do the laws pertain to, say for instance, if I were an ISP and I wanted to set up a data center in another country that doesn't fall under the jurisdiction, can you just bypass the entire law that way? And just do basically whatever you want by setting up a co-located server in South America even, or something?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we've, at work, we joke about that sort of thing because some of our competitors have set up servers in Amsterdam where laws are different. There are treaties, however. On the other hand, we have customers who are already in the Netherlands, and while their users really don't like the fact that if we get a takedown that we have to act on it, they have to be notified, and they have to say, oh, we'll be good in order to get back on there and start posting again, probably under another name from another IP, and we'll never know, that we still do have to go through it, even though they aren't in the country because we're here. I think if you were in a place where the law could reach, I would be very hesitant to do that. And you run into the issues where I was talking about before about getting a good Usenet feed. You know, there's a reason why, say, GigaNews, one of our larger competitors, set up in the Netherlands, is that there weren't very many good news feeds over there. You know, people didn't have a good feed, so hey, you know, they'll go over there, set up some servers, and provide, you know, good service there. Yes? Hang on, I've got it.
The way that that works, at least how I thought it worked, was that it's not where the data is, it's where the company is. It's where the company headquarters is instead of where the data is. Like, because you were saying in Britain, they have different laws here. So if the company's in Britain, they can ignore the DMCA, but...
Well, but they not have, Britain per se, but, you know, if you're in some small, you know, if you're in Cuba, you know, which may not exactly have... treaties with us on that matter, then you would be able to, you know, you could try and flaunt it, but if you've tried to do business in the U.S., you may have trouble there. You know, our parent company is a company called Critical Path, no kidding, and they have presence in Canada and Britain. They're international, you know. So we have to watch out there. You know, if we get something about, from somebody in Britain saying that there's a libelous comment, we step to. You know, it goes on to the lawyers do their thing, everybody, you know, spins into action. We just hope that we don't get very many of those, and generally we don't. So it really, that becomes such a complicated issue about whether or not you could have a data haven outside of the U.S. effectively. And of course, be able to provide quality Usenet, you know, if you could get fat enough pipes. Right now, I mean, we're talking, you know, multiple megabit pipes, you know, for us to do what we need to do. For anybody else, you know, most of the other people have sidelines, but GigaNews also is a large ISP in Texas. So they've got tons of fat pipe, you know, and stuff going both ways. So that's part of the issue. You know, with it, you know, you run into other technological issues as well. Pardon me for just one sec. Okay, let me try. Okay, apparently I got lost in mid-thought there on the last one there. One of the other things that complicates matters is that articles or a large binary file will be posted across multiple articles. Thus, there are multiple message IDs, multiple subject headers. It's all, as far as we as a Usenet server are concerned, they are all discrete articles. There's nothing inherent to them that says these things all go together. You know, they're algorithms that newsreader clients will use to put these, you know, to group these things together based on, you know, what part number and so forth. So, you know, that complicates things so that, you know, when somebody posts an article and it's in 10,000 one file or a series of files, a DVD, say, and it took 10,000 articles to do it, you know, plus the various files to be able to reconstruct it in case some of that doesn't get through, and the, you know, reposts and all of that, then that's burdensome on the other side for, say, Media Century and all that. To send us a list with 10,000 articles in it, as much as we would like that, you know, to have that with message ID for each one, you know, there becomes a gray area there. And that's what, I might skip ahead a little bit. Well, I've pretty much gone over that, the ugly of all of this. Most users don't want to give, you know, don't want to invite a lawsuit here. They don't want to play chicken with, you know, the MPAA or the Entertainment Software Association. Those people have lawyers to burn and money to burn, and most individuals just don't have that type of time or resources for it. So, and again, how Ben, a lot of what I've said there, Usenet isn't well covered by the DMCA. You know, we have message IDs, we don't have URLs. We have distributed content where it's on every server. We don't have one centralized server or even just a farm whereby things are mirrored. Let's see. A single takedown from the other point of view will do little for these other sites, you know, for all these others. So our user posted something, we get a takedown. It does nothing for the fact that it's on GigaNews or any other site. And also, just to make it more complicated, as came up in the case of Harlan Ellison versus, I can't remember the guy's name, I've got it on another page here, but it basically boiled down to Harlan Ellison versus, you know, AOL, other people, and Remark, again, Remark being, you know, super news years back, a web-based thing that we had, similar to Deja on Google. But we were dragged into that too. But in the versus AOL portion of that, they argued that they should be exempt for this because these articles weren't posted from their server. They were posted from elsewhere. And therefore, it should fall under the transitory digital network provisions of Section 512 and thus be treated differently. As in, you know, they are just getting things from point A to point B. They do not really have any responsibility to the user, you know, or for the user. They couldn't do anything to stop this from being posted. They ended up, well, I guess you could say winning some and losing some. Skip ahead to that one since I'm talking about it. That one, they, you know, all of the Harlan Ellison things, in my personal opinion, nobody really won except for the lawyers. You know, they got paid. Mr. Ellison himself, you know, may feel, at least he had his, you know, he got to go up against big guys there and stand his ground, which, you know, was good for him. From, you know, say AOL's point of view, they got to make the point about the transitory digital networks, but they got shut down because they had changed their abuse address and weren't really, or basically they had changed the address that they would receive DMCA complaints at and had not received some of these complaints, and arguing that they should have safe harbor or be considered to have not had notice simply because they couldn't be given notice didn't really fly with the judge there. So they kind of fell down on that front. But, you know, their case versus us, according to Ellison's own website there, so, you know, I'm not divulging anything that I might know about the case. It all came down to what was mainly a technological fix, whereby, you know, which is similar to what we would ideally like to be able to do, and what you're saying about being able to do automatic refusals of bad stuff. It would, you know, it wouldn't be bad if to have trusted people. You know, if we really knew that Media Century always sent good reports, that they always were accurate and dead on, they weren't ever for our competitors, there were always stuff that could be looked at by message ID, and we could trust this, then it would be very tempting, you know, just from, you know, there's not a moneymaker to be taking down stuff, you know, or to spend the time on it, to spend my time as, you know, a senior person at the company, but I have the experience to look at this. I could train up somebody, but we could automate that to say, okay, anything from Media Century, from this thing with a certain PGP signature, we're just going to go ahead and do it. We're going to take this stuff down, we're going to generate an email, send it to the user, everything's all done, you know, we're happy with that. That's pretty much what came out of Ellison, you know, with Remark, and this can be found on his own website, so, you know, that it's all just down to, you know, it got a technological fix and lawyers got paid, you know, on all sides.
Talking about that particular case, since that's an individual, it is then possible for individuals to send takedown notices?
Oh, yes.
Or just corporations?
That wasn't really clear there. Is it copyright owners of any ilk can send a takedown notice? If you wrote something, if you snapped a picture, whatever, if you find it, and this goes beyond Usenet, you know, if you see that being used on, you know, the cover of, you know, Newsweek online or whatever, you know, your photograph, by all means, you know, go over to Chilling Effects. I think they've got an engine to, you know, you fill in the form and, you know, it'll generate it for you. But you probably want a lawyer helping you with that anyway, you know. But yes, you could send this, and this is sort of a notable to me case where an individual, you know, an intellectual property holder took on big companies, you know, instead of the other way around where you see the megacorps trouncing on, you know, college students and so forth. To back up a little bit to one case that's sort of trying to back up a little bit, ALS scan versus remark communities being, you know, super news in an earlier stage there, but separate from what I was actually dealing with in the day. The DMCA was new then. You know, this was back in 1999, and it had been around for about a year. There wasn't much case law, that, especially anything that dealt with Usenet. This was the first thing that really pertained to Usenet from a DMCA perspective, the first case law. And it turned out through, you know, a couple of cases, because it was, we got a summary judgment that kind of threw it out, and they appealed it. It went up. The appeal was in some ways upheld or remanded to, you know, be tried again. In some ways they upheld the original verdict. But what really came out of it, well, one of the big differences here, one of the reasons Remark was a target and easy pickings, was they provided binary news groups, which, you know, Deja News and Google Groups, you know, being the inheritor of Deja, don't provide. You can't get pictures on there. And ALS scan creates copyrighted adult erotic photographs to sell on CD-ROMs and display on its website for paying subscribers. And that's from the case there. Basically, they're a porn site. They didn't like us competing with them. That was how they saw it. And their lawsuit also, you know, said as much. They sent a cease and desist. They did not bother to name what was being, what they wanted removed. They wanted two whole news groups removed. And this is one of the things that, in my opinion, is one of the greatest threats to Usenet, is when, and this would be largely ineffectual, but it cuts down on the effectiveness of Usenet. When someone says, I want you to remove an entire news group, you know, regardless of content, is that ALS, the two news groups that they were referring to were alt.als and alt binaries pictures erotica ALS. They felt, you know, their name was in the group name, therefore these were created to infringe on their copyrights, make it easier for people to find them, and so forth. And the case of alt.als, the news group was actually created for discussion of adaptive learning students, which is something I don't really understand, about a decade before all this. So, you know, they were at least incorrect on one case, you know, one point there. They wanted both news groups removed, however, and they said that, you know, because we did not go and remove them, and which other sites apparently had removed them when notified of this, they just said, this is the easy way out. We're going to remove the group. Remark stood firm. Our founders at the time, you know, didn't feel that that was a good precedent to set, that it was not, you know, in their best interest to go around removing groups just at the first hint of anything here. You know, it went to trial again. It's a big deal for us. Because we refused to remove the groups, they took us to trial, or took us to court about it. Among the claims was that we failed to honor their takedown. We argued that they didn't provide an adequate notice. They did not name the articles individually. They didn't even name many of them. They said, these news groups contain a lot of bad stuff. You could see all of our models on this website, and thus you could go cruising through this news group and find all the pictures yourself that have our copyright notice on them, which, you know, Usenet isn't something like a website where you could go cruise through there so easily. And in this case, they were talking about 3 months worth of articles, about 10,000 pictures that they claimed were infringing. It was burdensome on both sides, you know, on either side to take the, to deal with this. Another bit of a failing here in how this all works. What came out of this, though, was that we still have the news groups on our server. They're pretty much dead. The alt.als group is dead because we, you know, cleaned up our act, and we don't accept binary posts into non-binary news groups. You know, if it doesn't say binary in the name, we don't pass traffic in it, it's binary. We don't store traffic in it, it's binary. It allows us to keep a lot more text messages around, which we feel is important. You know, we can't just pool it all together and have 20 days of everything just because, you know, it gives an hour more of DVDs. You know, instead we'd rather have 2 years of text and an hour less of DVDs, which sadly is about the ratio. It's just pretty sad. You know, Usenet has gotten much bigger than what it had been. This is, again, from Chilling Effects here. The outcome is that, and this you'll see on a lot of, if you look at cases or look at takedown notices being analyzed, you might see this where it says, however, in the recent case of ALS Scan Inc. versus Remark Communities Inc., the court found that the copyright owner did not have to point out all of the infringing material, but only substantially all of the material. The relaxation of the specificity requirement shifts the burden of identifying the material to the service provider, raising the question of the extent to which a service provider must search through its system. Online service provider customers should note that this situation might encourage OSPs to err on the side of removing allegedly infringing material. And yeah, basically, it does.
Because they decide that they just don't want to deal with that, so they'll take it and destroy it for everybody.
Exactly. That, you know, in our case in particular, you know, as a Usenet site, there is, you know, like I was saying earlier, we can't say, if it's wrong on its face, even, we can't say it's wrong on its face, you know, send us this again, or, you know, at least look at it, you know, because we don't believe, you know, from what we've seen, that a lot of the automated companies go beyond this and look at what they're actually sending a notice about, and said that they just send it blindly based on basic heuristics that a name popped up. The same sort of thing they might put on a P2P network, and the same thing that, you know, is thwarted on a P2P network by people using funky, you know, leet-speak names and so forth, people do on Usenet as well, or where they use synonyms, you know, die hard might be, you know, murder pointy or something, you know, just as a poor example. People use things that a human can figure out, you know, that you'd have to pass a Turing test to figure out what you're about to download, or they might not name it at all. You'd have to be on a certain IRC channel to know what a certain thing is.
Was any thought given to asking the company to provide like a hash set of all of their files that are copywritten, and then scan your server with that hash set, identifying the files that match, and then just recursively deleting those files?
At the time, for Remark or ALS Scan versus Remark Communities, I don't believe that came up. I don't know that it would have been feasible either, because at that point, it was arguing in much of the case about they wanted the news group down and they wanted to make a point. Many of the articles had already been expired from our servers. As even nowadays, we would only have, well, I guess now technically we've got maybe 180 days worth of single part binaries, you know, what would be pictures. But back then, you know, 3 months worth would have been, you know, woohoo and free to everybody through a web interface. That might have been too much goodness all at once, you know. So I'm pretty sure that we didn't have that sort of, you know, much of it would have been removed over time. They were arguing that we didn't, you know, step up and do it then. And we were sort of caught out after time. We couldn't really offer that sort of solution. We wanted to make the point that we felt, you know, in which our lawyers had advised us that it required specificity. You know, we thought there's specificity requirements within the Section 512 there, that said, you know, they had to identify what they wanted removed. Well, they took it one way, we took it another, and the judge pretty much split it down the middle and said they needed to name it, identify it substantially, which is again vague, didn't really add too much to it from a practical point of view, from our point of view as ISP, where we see this, where we get something that's incomplete, where I get a takedown where I know it's posted by our users, by the header, and it has a subject header that I can go and look up. I've got to go look it up, pull those message IDs myself from our logs, which, you know, is a little bit easier than doing a full, you know, hash check or anything like that, and remove those articles. I have to, you know, cough up the message IDs. But if they were to say, you know, something that's closer to dealing with the transitory digital network provisions, which, again, I don't know that they understand Usenet well enough to know what really applies here, but they send us a notice for something posted from GigaNews. We don't have GigaNews' logs, and, you know, that's probably for the best. You know, we don't know what their users are posting. We can't go through there and just look up a subject without being given a group or a date or anything very easily at all. Many of the large binary news groups have over a million articles, individual articles in there, and that's a lot of headers to be scanning over. So back in the day, it probably seemed like similarly, it would have been a, you know, technological challenge to do what you're suggesting there. And I guess that's similar to what Napster tried too, where they said we'd go and clean out our archives of these hash sets. But since we don't have hash sets, and so we've got articles which are stored as a header and body all together, where the it could be spread across. Say a picture was a little bit too big, or a user thought it was too big to post in one piece, so it's in two pieces. So we would actually have to pull every article, reassemble them, remove the transfer encoding, or the UU encoding, or Y-Inc, or MIME encoding on it, basically. Then run the hash and see what we had there to remove it. And we'd have to do that on a constant basis, really, I think, to have made them happy that we were keeping all of this out of there. And anytime they generated new content, which may be a little bit easier for them than, say, the recording industry, you know, or a, you know, Sony, you know, somebody who's going to really care about their stars coming out, you know, they're going to produce, you know, a few, relatively a few records a year compared to the number of pictures that ALS Scan may generate and put up on their website in that time, you know, where they could easily snap 1,000 more digital pictures in a week and say, oh, these are all suitable to sell to our users. And they would then have to provide us with the hash sets. And again, it also boils down to everybody else would have to do that too. So thus you get places like Media Century who will do the scanning for them, you know, through poorer heuristics such as the name. So that makes it a lot more difficult.
And they're going after you as opposed to the guy who posted it in the first place.
Oh, well, yeah, it's sort of the Steve Dallas rule of lawsuits is you sue the people with money, you know.
Of course.
Yeah, you don't sue the people you're going to lose to. You don't sue Opus with no money. You sue, you know, the camera company for not warning you. You're going to get hit, you know, taking pictures of celebs. You know, it's they're going to sue us because we have money. And also, they can make a bigger splash.
You don't have common carrier status either.
No, that's one of those common misconceptions, I think, where people think that we might or that we'll blow that because we do spam filtering.
You should, but I know you don't.
I don't understand enough the issues surrounding common carrier to speak to that fully. But I do know for sure it does not apply to us. It's not like somebody picking up the phone and, you know, talking about, you know, giving trade secrets and then Ma Bell being held liable or not due to common carrier status. Because, you know, that's another thing the DMCA provided some structure for to us. Was that before that, it was even more nebulous. You know, were we common carriers? I don't know. You know, back in 1995, we were sort of strutting around thinking, yeah, maybe we are invincible. I mean, look at the Netcom case there, you know. It's all good. You know, the user did it. We didn't do it. You know, we weren't contributing to this. But things have come down and sort of provided us with more information to go on and for, you know, the people who would send takedowns to go on. So, and that's...
Do kill files still exist?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and good thing, too.
I'm sorry to interrupt. We need to insert a table quickly.
That's fine. Do y'all need to shift this?
It's not quite long enough.
Before I get the other side. Oh, yeah.
I can get out.
You don't.
Oh, no.
You're here for the next panel as well.
God. Sorry.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Did I? Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Here you go, Ben.
I was wondering, are there any legal recourses like suing a company for providing false takedown notices? And
there
what,
are.
What sort of legal repercussions does sending a false takedown notice have?
Let me see if I can just alt-tab out of this and find some of the other resources I had. Oh, goody, that's just going to be my background now. Yeah, well, we can find that page again easily enough. Okay, there are recourses, but it's not spelled out very much, very clearly, and I think that it would also come down to proving it. That, say Media Century, you know, on the behest of the entertainment software industry, sent something saying that there was a file posted by one of our users
that was a that infringed on their copyright on, say, Lord of the Rings, that they could produce a game which happened to be called Lord of the Rings. And this takedown came through here, and somebody else had posted something else, say it was fan art for Lord of the Rings, which again, it's a hazy thing copyright-wise, but that's a whole other panel, really. But they sent this, and I look at this and I say, okay, great, somebody's fanfic on Lord of the Rings just happened to be posted to this group, cross-posted to a binary group. So Media Century noticed it and picked it up because of the name, and that was it. They didn't do any other checks. They didn't check to see that this could possibly be, two DVDs long worth of content. No, it's one post, all we can do is, from my understanding, and really all our lawyers don't have much incentive to go to bat for a user unless it's something really, bad like that, but even then they may not, everybody's got their own concerns, but it would go to the user. If the user did nothing, if the user did not send a putback notice, then where's, we can't really step in there and say, oh, guys, come on.
But is there any recourse more than just a putback notice?
Is there anything more than just a putback notice that a user can do? Like, let's say a company obviously knowingly
is definitely a different thing because they've committed perjury there. But then again, you've got to prove that. Part of the DMCA takedown notice is saying that swear under penalty of perjury that the above is true to the best of your knowledge. So again, you've got kind of a bit of an out there. The whole, I don't remember. Maybe we did do this. Maybe we did really write fanfic or somebody told me it was okay. But let me see if I can get this file up here because it actually mentions it. Okay, it's opening it in this window. Let me just scroll down here real quick to okay, misrepresentations is covered in Section 512. Any person who knowingly material misrepresents under this section that material or activity is infringing or that material or activity was removed or disabled by mistake or misidentification shall be liable for any damages, including costs and attorney's fees, incurred by the alleged infringer or by the alleged infringer by any copyright owner or copyright owner's authorized licensee or by service provider who is injured by such misrepresentation as a result of the service provider relying upon such misrepresentation in removing or disabling access to the material or activity claimed to be infringing or in replacing the removed material or ceasing to disable access to it. So basically, if we can say it harmed us that we lost customers, we got sued, that we're covered by having notified the user, that's a whole other part of the section there, is that if we notify them that we took it down, they have their way to put it back. If they don't notify us, we're pretty much good there. However, that protects us from the user doing anything to us. But we would have to show that we had damage there. And to take the sort of flip side of the AOL case, where part of their defense against saying that they were a contributory infringer, that they were really making money off the fact that AltBinary's ebooks had Ellison's work in there for whatever period. They had all of 10 complaints when they finally did remove the news group. And AOL, pointed out that we don't have that many Usenet users, compared to our whole user base anyway, and all of 10 of them, were damaged by this, were harmed by this, removal. You can't really say that, our business was based around this, that by, that we were really contributing to this copyright infringement or benefiting from it directly. So to turn that around, if we were to take down and remove something from our server, not remove a whole news group, mind you, but just remove an individual thing in compliance to your standard takedown, then we would have to then show that there was harm to us before we could really benefit, turn around and sue them to say that we had any sort of damages. The poster, if they, say contacted a lawyer and had lawyer's fees,
may be able to do that. But then again, that's probably more lawyers' fees, and it, you know, it really would depend on that person. You know, it would take the right type of person, or maybe a lawyer who had posted something and willing to, you know, go to bat for themselves to follow up on that, to say, hey, you had my material removed. You should have known better. You should have been checking more. You know, the burden isn't shifted completely on the ISP. In fact, the ISP, you know, from our point of view, we're just sort of a go-between. You know, we have the really awkward position if we get a putback notice that that has to come back through us. It's not even that the individual user posts it or sends it to the original person who sent the notice. They give it to us and we give it back to them. And it, you know, we're just sort of stuck in the middle, being yanked around until somebody has a chance to sue or has to let us go. But there are some recourses there, but it's so, you know, so built up on actual damages, you know, that they're liable for the damages incurred, that can you really say that, you know, say you posted your fanfic to a news group and it was removed erroneously, that you suffered damages? You know, in certain cases you might be able to, you know, say, well, that was a prelude to the launch of my site or something to that effect, you know, that it equated to marketing. But you would have to be able to show damages and feel that they were enough to go up against a megacorp, you know, in some cases, or the Harlan Ellisons of the world in other cases. Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing is that on Usenet, you know, it could easily be argued that, well, you know, reposting is so common, it's, you know, overdone, that you could easily replace that material yourself. And so long as they don't send another notice to take it down again, which unfortunately would probably land you as a repeat infringer if you had not complained about the first one being incorrect. And we're stuck. We've now gotten two DMCA notices against you, you know, for the same thing, no less. And, you know, over time, and we're stuck. Now you're a repeat infringer. We've got to do something about this, because if we don't say that we took it down again, and then, or if we say we took it down again and it shows up a third time, they might start to get antsy. Now this guy's posted Lord of the Rings three times, you know, by golly, you know how much we've lost on that, you know, posting that movie all these times, and they don't have a clue. You know, they're looking for the words Lord of the Rings and certain binary groups, and that would be it, you know. I'm surprised that nobody's done, you know, tried to exploit this in the other direction, really. But it really, somebody can abuse it. And that was one of my points as closing, is it can be abused. Somebody could send this for things that are close. They could send it to remove things that were shareware that really could be out there, that'd be allowed to be out there, but, you know, that the shareware author, you know, wouldn't mind to be out there because they're getting publicity. But they would not be able, you know, we can't tell the difference. We aren't allowed to make that sort of determination ourselves. Even if we know about it, even if we, you know, anything shy of it being ours, you know, something that we wrote and us being the intellectual property holder, you know, we're just SOL there. Do you want the mic or?
With the evil uses of the DMCA, is it possible that an individual can send a DMCA takedown notice to purposefully hurt somebody?
Yes.
Can they fake it enough to make it look like, yes, they are the people who hold the copyright, and you have to hold to that anyway?
Certainly. Yeah, I mean, that
sucks.
Yes. That because we have limited ability to look at things and say that this is good. You know, if we look at it and it says, you know, if I receive something through an anonymous or mailer that says that it's a takedown for a certain thing, you know, and it looks valid up to a point, but it has no way for me to contact them again. It doesn't say, you know, I'm Bob Smith and sweet whatever, you know, give me a call if you have any doubts about this, some way to verify the authenticity of it. Then, you know, if on those grounds, I can send something back as being an incomplete notice, you know, or a non-valid notice. And if it bounces because it came through an anonymous mailer and that was the only way that they gave us to contact them, well, we did our part and we've got it on file, it bounced, you know, yada yada. But if someone sent through something and they had gone to Chilling Effects and pulled up the headers and knew exactly what the headers looked like, which Chilling Effects fortunately doesn't put all the headers up there to know where it came from and so forth, the right servers, then we would get this and we'd really be in a bind unless we had a real reason to believe that it was fake at absolute surety. We would really be better off doing something with it. And more to the point, people will do stuff that is on its face malicious, where you get people claiming copyright over somebody quoted my article on Usenet. I didn't give them permission to quote my article on Usenet. It's like, you know, this is how Usenet works, guy. So I want you to take down that article and kick them off your server and hand over all their personal information. And that sort of thing happens. It's really, they think that they can use it as leverage against us. That, at least, we can turn around and say, no, you know, this doesn't fit. And usually those are in, those notices aren't very well formatted anyway, and we can send it back on technical grounds. And they decide that there's some better way they can get back at their enemies. So now, let me just pull up the last page there and wrap up.
So they're trying to make you into the police department.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff has switched over so that we are expected to be police. You know, with the ALS scan case, they, you know, more burden was placed on us to be the police. We have to look at the, you know, dig up some of the materials and say, I get something where we feel that, you know, it was one of our users who posted it, and we can kind of look it up. They gave us enough information that a court might find, you know, a judge might find to be substantially, or substantial notification. They gave part of the subject, you know, say. Then we really are obligated to go in there, find that as best we can, and remove it from our server, even if, you know, they didn't give us all the information. And we have to, you know, we may have to err on the side of being overbroad in choosing what to remove in those cases, because, you know, in the case of, you know, with ALS, they didn't tell us everything. We could go through there on an article by article basis, looking at tons and tons of their pornography and other people's pornography, trying to find the right pictures, and they hopefully haven't had the copyright notices removed by the poster, which can happen. And that's another thing with the hashing, is that rotate the image, it's gone, you know, even if you've got it watermarked with, heck, I can't, digimarked, certain things can remove that. Simple alterations, you know, watermarking just doesn't survive in a way that's automatically detectable.
Basically, you can change it, and you can change it.
Crop it, and suddenly it's got another, yeah.
And it's still the original picture, but...
Yeah, in fact, you know, change the brightness because you thought it was too dark, you know, and put your own logo on there, because a lot of people post binaries to Usenet for, apparently, I don't know, for Netcred or something, you know, mm-hmm. that they want their name all over everything there. This is, you know, Bobo's post to Usenet, and this is getting them Netcred. That's all they're looking for. But for us, we do have a strong incentive to just remove materials named, even if not, if they are not named very specifically, so long as we can find them as quickly as possible, and maybe going a little bit farther, and then letting the user know, and at least we can tell them exactly what we removed.
And what about the costs of this? From the standpoint, your company now has to hire you or another you to basically
clone
scan
me.
The news
yeah.
groups.
Okay. Well, fortunately, there isn't a scanning the news groups aspect so much as scanning our log, you know, searching our logs on occasion. If somebody gives something that isn't, you know, is obviously posted from us but was not dead on identification, you know, didn't include like message IDs, so we could find those. And of course, you know, it's in my best interest and the company's that I automate that as much as possible.
Okay.
But yeah, there is definitely a cost to it, and we're just sort of stuck with it.
But that's a cost to doing business.
Yeah, and it beats being sued.
Right, that is just the cost of doing business.
Our lawyers make more money than I do per hour, I can guarantee, and they probably they'll probably call me anyway to find out what this is all about, this Usenet thing, because the parent company doesn't do Usenet. We were part of another acquisition, and we don't really fit the mold.
I've been using Usenet since 1988, so I've been around for too long. But I've gone to places where there used to be a lot of Usenet server, you know, news groups on this server, and then I come to find out that because of basically lawsuit, that whole portion of Usenet basically got taken down.
Yeah.
Because somebody complained that
oh, there's too much pornography on here.
Yeah. One of the things that you missed earlier was like our reaction to the New York Attorney General raid of Buffnet in New York many years ago now, I think 6 or 7 or 8, whereby we removed a ton of news groups, which would be, you know, just could be considered on their face, you know, just looking at the names, somebody might reasonably say, there might be child pornography here. That's definitely illegal. We don't want that. That's why they had all their servers confiscated. That would severely impact our business and would have crippled us back then. So we removed them, we've kept them off. Other sites carry them and try to, and some of them think that because they carry them and carry every little garbage news group out there that gets no traffic, somebody mistyped it, what have you, that grants them common carrier status, just on that note. Just to go through this, you know, that it's easily abused to make false complaints, to strike at your enemies, and people on Usenet, you can get enemies just, you know, you posted about how your cat's doing today, somebody takes offense at this, or just thinks you're easy pickings, you know, the trolls, the flamers, so forth, and the one-upmanship in the binary posting news groups will get takedowns where it's obvious somebody's trying to shut up somebody who they don't like, you know, or shut, you know, they want to get more net cred to themselves, you know, they aren't getting their posts out fast enough, this other person's beating them to the punch, suddenly they're yesterday's news, you know, shut them down, you know. And so it's, you know, one guy going after another. And of course, finally, DMCA poorly applies to Usenet. It really wasn't, there are so few people who really understand how Usenet works from a back end. I mean, we consider ourselves a rare breed at work that we should have, you know, 5 people who've been on the net, you know, on Usenet for a total of, I don't know, probably 40 years with, you know, Aid Lovett from Demon and Jeremy Nixon of Clean Feed fame and, you know, myself and so on. And you get a lot of old timers there. So not many people understand it. Legislators definitely don't. The companies that send these things don't. The users really don't. And unfortunately, some of our competitors really don't either. They just, you know, they aren't going to step up and fight this any more than anybody else would. So I think that about, that's done really. So that's it for me. I don't know if we even have any time for any other questions anybody might have. Scott, anything? All right. Thank you all for being here. I'm surprised to see such a crowd for a rather esoteric these days topic. So I hope you all enjoyed it.
An hour sitting in registration, or I would have been here earlier.
That's cool. I understand that. So if you want to talk to me at all after, you know, I'd be happy to chat using that about anything here. So that's it for me, and I'll clear the stage for the next guy. Thank you, Scott, for having me here.